gonna play on and stand strong. With Drolo and Dibs, turn the game on. Bump up the volume, it's time to play.
Wednesday and welcome to Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. It is a Warrior Wednesday brought to you by our good friends at Friedman's Appliance. A trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. As always, for those of you who would like to follow along with the conversation, hit us up on the Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. We are stacked today. John Morosi in about 30 minutes, floating the notion that the trade market for Madison Bumgarner is heating up given what took place in Washington yesterday. 6 years, $140 million for Patrick Corbin. One season, Dibs, in Patrick Corbin's career in which he's had an ERA south of 3.4. And that gets you $23 million a year.
It sure does. And I know you've got a very young son, and I'm not sure if he's left-handed, but if I was the father of Wyatt, I would go home immediately and put everything in his left hand. Because if you're a left-hander and you can throw, doesn't matter if you're a bum or a hung tooth, and Corbin's not, but you can make good money as a left-handed pitcher.
Listen, little baby, you've been here 7 days now.
Yes.
It's time to start earning.
Yes, get on board with the plan, which is you being left-handed with 92 miles an hour with movement.
My name's left-handed, by the way, the oldest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we've been throwing the baseball around.
Loving it.
Brian Baldinger coming up in an hour to talk NFL football. How does an NFL long snapper get suspended for 10 games due to a PED infraction? Well, the 49ers found a way to pull that one off, so we will discuss that with Baldy at 7 o'clock, Jim Barnett at 8, Steve Mariucci at 8:30, Cam Inman at 9:30. And a reminder, 7:20 a.m. today, as we're doing every day this week and every day next week, we're giving you an opportunity to win a trip to Hawaii, you and three guests. But the only way you will have a chance is if you register on the website. You go to 957thegame.com, you register, and then every morning, this week and next week, we will announce a name from that pool at 7:20. If your name is called, you have 9 minutes and 57 seconds to call us back. And if you do, congratulations, you've qualified. Monday and Tuesday, Squadoosh, Dibs.
Squadoosh?
Nobody called back, so the odds of winning this thing are getting better by the moment.
I thought Squadoosh might have been the qualifier's name, like Sammy Squadoosh or Steve Squadoosh from Redwood City. You're telling me we're 0 for 2 right now, Coach?
We are 0 for, we're actually 0 for 4 because we call a backup name,
wow,
too. So the odds, may they ever be in your favor.
Thank
Is that
you.
How 100 games work?
Yes.
May
they
yes.
ever be in your favor?
Katniss Everdeen right there. Joe Fortenbaugh. Although she was not the one who said that. That was the lady with the crazy lipstick with the two-colored
Rachel
lips.
Rachel McAdams. I don't remember
Thank
her
you.
Character's name, but yes.
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, that's her.
She plays the lady with the crazy bouffant.
Rachel McAdams. I thought that was the girl from... Yeah, it's Elizabeth Banks.
I thought it was... Oh, you know, it might be...
Yes, I'm 100% right. It's Elizabeth Banks.
Dearly beloved.
How do you mix up Elizabeth Banks and Rachel McAdams? One's a brunette, one's a blonde.
No, they're not.
Yes, Rachel McAdams is a brunette.
She's been a blonde as well.
In one movie 20 years ago. Yes, yes. This is a funeral take. Good
man.
God.
It's one thing to think that daylight savings time passed. It's another thing entirely to botch a cast member from such a storied vehicle.
Thank you. She's a blonde as well.
She is known for her roles as a brunette. She has one role as a blonde. It's the role that Mean Girls.
Mean Girls, yes.
And everything after that. What was she in The Notebook?
She was a brunette.
And is that not her most famous movie?
Yeah, yeah.
So this take...
I like Mean Girls.
Rest in peace.
Tough way to start the day.
Mean
you
Girls
go,
better.
Glenn Coco.
Okay. It's not 5
Whatever that
anymore.
Means. What is it? What yeah. does that
Your
mean?
Hour's over.
What is Glenn Coco?
It's a Mean Girls quote.
Yes.
Let's get you
Thanks.
Back to sleep.
No,
pre-game
I,
show's
I
over. We're into the actual game now, young man.
Yeah. All right. Here's where we begin. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors will take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland. Tip time's 4 p.m. right here on 95.7 The Game. Now, the Warriors find themselves as a very heavy 11.5-point favorite. This isn't to be a surprise to anyone at this point because Cleveland has fallen on tough times. They are 5-18 this season. But 30 encounters between the Warriors and the Cavs over the last 4 years. They've gotten together 30 times between the regular season and the postseason. Anthony Slater of The Athletic has a tremendous piece up now looking back over the last 4 years at some of the great moments between these two teams when they've matched up. Regular season, postseason, all that good stuff. Now, we today in the Money Spot, starting around 7:20, are going to reflect on all those great moments. We're going to bring you guys into the show. Right now, and we didn't talk about this before, right now, I'd like to play a little bit of appreciation to the city of Cleveland. They have been the butt of several of my jokes over the last 4 years. But you know what? Every year when it came down to the NBA finals of this dynastic run for the Warriors, they were there. And whether they were winning in the second year of the dynasty or taking it on the chin in years 3 and 4 of the dynasty, they were there. And we made the jokes and we looked at them with animosity because they were the rival. I think right now, for just a small moment, we can at least appreciate Cleveland for being such an integral part of what we've witnessed in the NBA over the last 4 years.
Yeah, they were a great foil, and they were a good rival to have over the course of the 4 years. And it's sad that it has to be put behind now, but when you're 5-18 and there's really no chance that these two teams will meet in the NBA Finals again,
they haven't been mathematically eliminated.
They haven't yet, unlike some football teams that are a little bit closer to us who have been mathematically eliminated. But
all the ones that are close to us.
More on that at 6:45, but it's going to be fun to see them go back to Cleveland tonight. Obviously, it won't have the same zest and the same passion from the fans. I hope the fans in Cleveland have a chance to pause and reflect on what a great four-year run it was. Don't worry about the result tonight. And I don't think the crowd's going to be revved up to try to boo the Warriors. They understand where they are and where this rivalry sits. But it's fun to look back on a night like this and just think about 30 matchups in 4 years.
What do you think? If you could go back and do it all over again, do you like the idea of the same opponent 4 years in a row, knowing it's one of the greatest basketball players of all time, knowing that some years they were the favorite, some years they had to come back, some years they had to go 7 games to find their way into the finals? This past year, we didn't give them much of a chance. And yet, lo and behold, James strapped that team on his back and got them back into the finals. Do you like the fact that when we look back in history, it's going to be Warriors, Cavs, at least for this block? Or would you have preferred to see maybe Boston 1 year, Cleveland 1 year, Philly 1 year, Indiana 1 year?
I think it's perfect that it was that team and really that individual, because you look at now the most storied players in NBA history and the players with the most losses in NBA Finals history. And this is not to disparage LeBron James.
We've already appreciated Cleveland enough.
No, it's a tip of the cap, though, because you look at the player who's lost more NBA Finals than anyone, and he happens to be the logo. So there's not great shame in being a guy. I believe Jerry West went 1-9 in the NBA Finals because he just couldn't get by Boston. Boston won it every single year, but to be there is impressive. And so for Cleveland to have gotten there 4 times and they got the one victory, which, you know, Cleveland looks the first year and they say, well, if Kyrie wasn't hurt, if Kevin Love wasn't hurt, they'd probably win that one. And then the Warrior fans say, well, if Draymond didn't get suspended and if they didn't have other injuries, then they would have won the second year. So there's still enough intrigue in this back and forth to make it interesting for 4 years.
And if you're not interested in the spread or necessarily the outcome, the hype surrounding this game, it's not going to be a nationally televised game. As Anthony Slater mentions in his piece, ESPN's opting for Philadelphia-Toronto. Makes sense considering those are two serious contenders in the East, while Cleveland has fallen on tough times. But that is the point. That is the point. As Warrior fans, I'm not going to speak for all of us. I'll speak for myself. I have gotten so far beyond spoiled, it is just unbelievable to even comprehend where this used to be and where it is now. If I'm not seeing Bodings on a regular basis, if I'm not getting 20-point quarters from individual superstars, I feel cheated. And the reality is I don't actually feel cheated, but we have come to live a certain lifestyle watching this team. Our NBA lifestyles are just, we're never going to get this again. There is no way something like this will ever happen again to this fan base. You get something like this maybe once, and you've got to hang on for the ride and appreciate every moment. And it's easy to overlook and easy to get spoiled, but tonight's a perfect opportunity to look at the opposition and say, this is how quickly it can all come to an end. Now, granted, the Warriors are balanced enough that the departure of one superstar isn't going to derail everything, but look at what's happened in Cleveland since LeBron left. It is just, that's it. That's it. No one wants to be there. No one wants to attend the games. No one's interested in the product. That is the end, and it may never get better ever again. And I'm not talking better as in go to the finals how many years in a row. When's the next time you're even going to find your way into the playoffs? It could be a while.
It could be. And the rebuild of that scope is obviously greater because they were so built up by one player. And here, like you mentioned, if you think about 5 years from now, Steph Curry probably will still be here, but he'll be 35. And if Klay's here, he's going to be 34, and Draymond will be 35. And you would imagine that Kevin Durant probably won't be here in 5 years. Durant could leave at the end of this year. Klay could leave, and this thing could fall apart quickly, or it could be kind of a slow fade. You never know how the end is going to come. And it's interesting that it's Cleveland that this happens to. And in the Slater piece, Steve Kerr talks about the first time that Cleveland was on the cusp of greatness when he was a player there, and how a guy Michael Jordan, a guy by the name of Michael Jordan, they knocked him out two consecutive years, and then the Cavaliers had three straight years where they were out in the first round, and then that was it. It was about 15 years of complete NBA oblivion.
Appreciate what you have while you have it. Now, John Morosi will join us in about 19 minutes. We'll appreciate him for a bit, and then we'll crap all over him because Michigan got voted by Ohio State.
Boy.
He's a big Michigan fan. So we'll set him up nicely for that. But a couple shout-outs. Shout-out the big fella, Lo Neal, still recovering from the illness, but text me last night. Seems like he's getting better. We told him, keep your contagious rear end at home.
Yeah.
We will see you Thursday. Also, shout-out number two to my man, Oscar. Baby Wyatt had his first doctor's appointment yesterday over at Mount Zion. First people we're checking in with are listeners of the program, part of the billions. He catches us in the 6 to 7 hour every morning. I figured we'd say, hello, Oscar. Thank you for the great service yesterday. We really enjoyed ourselves. I guess as much as you can enjoy yourself at a baby doctor's appointment. It's not exactly a Motley Crue concert, but you know what? It was an enjoyable experience nonetheless.
Yeah, in and out, easy. Get your copay in there and you're out. You know.
Thank you for being a part of the billions.
Oh, Oscar.
Somehow, some way, the Niners' long snapper found his way into a 10-game suspension for a PED violation. People, I cannot make this stuff up. So, which positions in sports and which sports in general would be the most ridiculous to hear about someone using PEDs? Crazy conversation coming up next year on 95.7 The Game.
Don't miss Warriors president and GM Bob Myers as he joins Pompa and Bonte live from the Chase Center.
Have you ever worn any of those rings, Bob?
You can't do it, Pop. I can't. You could.
Not even for like a photo? I mean, you got to take one photo where you got all three on and you're like fanning yourself.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Bob Myers with Pompa and Bonte. Today at 1 on the home of the NBA champs, 95.7. The Game. Joe Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
MLB insider John Morosi in about 12 minutes. First question out of the gate, how serious is Philadelphia's interest in Madison Bumgarner? 1 hour from now, roughly 1 hour from now at about 7:20 a.m., your next opportunity to win a trip to Hawaii. But the only way to do so is if you have registered for the contest online at 957thegame.com. Make sure you do so now if you have already failed to achieve that mission. Help me out here, Dibs. I'm going to read directly from Nick Wagoner's article. He covers the 49ers for ESPN. The NFL announced Tuesday that San Francisco 49ers long snapper Kyle Nelson has been suspended without pay for 10 games for violation of the league's policy on performance-enhancing substances. Nelson was suspended for violation of the same PED policy before his time with the Niners. This is his second offense, which is why the suspension is for 10 games. As a result, he will begin serving the suspension immediately. The Niners brought in 5 long snappers yesterday in order to get ready for this weekend's game against Denver, one of which, shout out former Raider John Kondo, good friend of the program. I'm not sure which direction the Raiders go, but if it's Kondo, the applause, I would say, would be robust.
Yeah,
we
friend
are
of the
huge
program.
Kondo fans.
Be great to see him get that little 4-game taste with, you know, 4 games remaining. I don't know if Kondo is in great enough shape to be able to just pop out there and do it, but you got to find somebody. Such a specialized skill in football. It looks so easy when you watch the game, you don't even think about it, but when the long snapper goes out and they have to bring somebody in to replace it, all of a sudden you notice it.
Saw it firsthand. I want to say the year was 2008, but it may have been 2009. It was a Sunday afternoon game at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. The Steelers were playing the Giants. It may have been the year the Giants went to win the Super Bowl. It's like right in that wheelhouse. And I remember it was the first game I ever covered as a member of the media. So I'm up in the Pittsburgh press box, and Pittsburgh's long snapper got hurt in that game. It was a really good football game, but Pittsburgh's long snapper got hurt. So James Harrison had to step in as the emergency long snapper, and there was a situation where he snapped it over the punter's head when they were pinned back in their own end zone. I believe it resulted in a safety, and then that was the play that changed the game. Steelers end up losing a close one, and then afterwards in the locker room, everyone wants to talk to Harrison about what went wrong, and it's like, well, he doesn't do that for a living.
Right.
He had to fill in, but to your point, it might seem easy. That's because these guys are specialists who make it look easy.
Right, and it's just the pickup and the snap. We've talked to Brian Jennings, the former Niners long snapper, many, many times about just how finite it is because the holder, especially on PATs and field goals, you need the ball to come back exactly the same way if possible. That way you don't have to even spin the laces. So these guys are so good, they're so precise, yet I've never thought about it being a position where performance-enhancing drugs might be a factor.
Yeah, do you need PEDs to do this job? How does the long snapper... Now, if the long snapper is also the starting middle linebacker, all right, now we're talking about something I can wrap my head around. This Kyle Nelson, I got the damn pro football reference page up. He's got four career tackles. Four. He's been in the league since 2012. Broken with the Chargers when they were in San Diego. Played for the Redskins the following year in 2013. Has been with the Niners since 2014. He's got four career tackles. He's a long snapper. He just got nailed for a PED infraction for the second time.
Yeah.
And why are you taking PEDs?
Well, for his part, he says that he would never knowingly take a banned substance. I'm reading from his official statement on the Niners website.
Yeah, me too.
He says, I'm currently having the supplements tested. I hope to uncover the cause of the positive test. When the product is identified, I fully intend to seek legal action against the manufacturer to protect against this happening to other players in the future. So he's out there crusading for whatever supplement made him test positive because he doesn't, it doesn't sound like he believes that he actually took a PED.
Yeah, no, I've heard that before. Hopefully it all works out, yada, 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 all disclaimers, blah, blah, blah. Let me throw this at you. I read this yesterday and I thought to myself, what would be a professional athlete who would need PEDs less than a long snapper? Maybe you wouldn't say if you had all sports in the pantheon across the world, which would be the least likely to take PEDs? Long snapper probably isn't going to be your first call because he is still a football player.
Yeah.
So fine, I get it. You got to be big, strong, physical, all that stuff. But, I mean, for all football players, bizarre. What else would be, what would be less likely? Like if you caught a guy taking PEDs in billiards, or NASCAR.
Right. The first one I put down was bowling, a pro bowler.
Pete Weber.
Yes. If you had a pro bowler who tested positive, although I don't know if it would be the strength to be able to hurl the ball down there faster or just the overall ability to stay fit and be able to bounce back after long nights, maybe of cigarettes and beer. You know, you got to have the PEDs. The other one I put down, Joe, was jockey. You probably wouldn't see a jockey or I would be alarmed. To find a jockey, because you're so concerned about cutting weight, unless you took a PED that would help you just get lean muscle mass, a jockey would be another one who would be highly unlikely, in my opinion, to be popped for PEDs.
See, this conversation requires some in-depth discussion on that exact point, because 20 years ago, we looked at PEDs as guys just getting big, physical, jacked up, and they'd go out there and they'd be stronger. Now, PEDs, in the Lance Armstrong sense, were all about the ability to dope your blood so that
right.
you could have more endurance, better conditioning, it could perform at a higher level for a longer amount of time. So cycling makes sense. But yes, I don't know why you need great conditioning in bowling. Maybe you just inject it right into your right forearm so that you have great, tremendous spin.
Tremendous.
English, as they call it on
yes.
the ball. But
darts would be another one where I don't necessarily think.
Jacked up darts.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah. PEDs. You just squeezing that dart so hard, throwing it through the dartboard.
If you could take PEDs in any sport, though, what would it be? Like, first thing people would think would probably be, all right, well, baseball, I could hit a lot of home runs. Understandable. I was going through this, and I settled on tennis. Tennis.
Really?
If I could get away with it in any sport, tennis. Because if I could build the conditioning up to a certain point, tennis seems like a remarkable lifestyle. First of all, you're at your peak in what? You're like early 20s. You can't look at Federer. He's the exception to the rule. So a lot of these guys, early to mid-20s is when they're at their peak, which means you're probably single. You're traveling the world. You're playing in Monaco. You're playing in Asia, Australia, America. You're all over the place. So you're going to have this great jet-setting lifestyle. You're probably making good money, but if you're taking the PEDs and you can get yourself into a couple Wimbledon finals, you know, you don't have to win any majors, but if you can just sustain and make that kind of cash, that's for me. Ride that out until I'm about 32, and then good. I'm retiring. I'm done. I'm Brad Gilbert. I'm commentating, and I'm just living the life up in Marin.
Not bad. He wasn't even a guy who was at the top of tennis for that long. I mean, he was a top five player for a couple of years, but never won a slam, etc. And he's still...
I wasn't trying to disparage him, but I see that you've chosen that avenue.
I was trying to contextualize his career for those who may not be aware of Brad Gilbert, the younger members of our audience, Joe, who I'm always trying to cater to. That's how I do it.
Avid listener of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Friend of the program.
I remember when Dibs was hired, and it was, we really need to get the younger demographic. Bring it, Dibs.
Bring in the 50-year-old. Let's go. He can connect with the young people. It's interesting you say tennis, because I thought about golf, and, you know, I wonder if there aren't pro golfers who have or have used PEDs, because, you know, the muscles, you see some of these guys now, they're bigger than ever, and that would be a similar lifestyle to what you're talking about with tennis.
I think they're being used in literally every sport. I think every single sport. I think the high end is obviously cycling. If you're not using, like, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Right.
In cycling, if you're not using PEDs, you might as well get out of the business altogether. But every single sport has it. In golf, of course, get leaner, better conditioning. I mean, it looks like an easy sport, but
a lot of walking.
The 72nd hole, 4 days in a row of playing 18 holes. That's, you know, you felt that before.
Yeah, walking 8 to 10 miles a day and taking, you know, 70, or in my case, 90 or so swings.
Walk a couple hundred yards, take a 10-minute break, walk up to the green, take another 5-minute break. That's grueling work.
It can be. It can really wear you out. All that standing around.
How serious are the Phillies about pursuing a trade for Madison Bumgarner? John Morosi's all over the story. He's going to join us next here on 95.7 The Game.
Last time on Warriors Trivia Takedown.
Travis Schlenk is the general manager of the Atlanta Hawks. He was the assistant general manager for what NBA franchise prior to going to Atlanta?
Boston Celtics.
Now the cash prize is up to $1,200. Just listen to Warriors Live today at 2:50 for your chance to win. Then listen to Warriors Cavs at 4 on the home of the champs, 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowandibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network, 95.7 The Game contributor John Morosi joining us here on 95.7 The Game. John, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. I want you to start this conversation with us by helping to settle a dispute. I am of the belief that Major League Baseball's winter meetings are taking place at Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas because Major League Baseball has known for years that this is the winter of Bryce Harper. And what better way than to make Harper's life easier? He lives in Vegas, after all, than by stationing the winter meetings right there in his hometown. Did MLB take that into account?
Perhaps.
I'll take that as a yes.
I think that this was decided a number of years ago. It's been on the calendar for a while, and of course, as soon as Bryce Harper debuted in 2012, we would have known that this is the winter that he was going to become a free agent. So I think that may have been some clever scheduling on MLB's part. I don't foresee any expansion to Las Vegas in the very near term in Major League Baseball, but one never knows. So there are probably a couple of strategic reasons there. That maybe MLB wanted to visit Las Vegas, but I think for now it is going to be a wonderful place for a lot of great Bryce Harper reporting and rumors and speculation to occur.
And the hot stove is starting to heat up just a little bit, and we'll get to the Madison Bumgarner trade market in just a moment. But what do you think happens with Bryce Harper? When do the offers start coming in, and about what price point do you think are we going to end up at?
Well, I think Bryce Harper, it's going to happen one of two ways. Either he signs for $300 million or more, or he takes a very short-term deal where he sets all kinds of records on the average annual value, where he goes 2 for 75 or 2 for 80 somewhere. But I think the more likely scenario is he gets the long-term deal, probably with an opt-out, because that's what he wants to be able to have to give him that flexibility. The Nationals, following yesterday's news about Patrick Corbin, I think are not going to be the team that he goes to unless it's a shorter-term deal. To me, the Phillies are still very much involved in Bryce Harper. I think the Dodgers are very much involved there. The New York Yankees are involved. The Chicago White Sox are a team that is heavily interested in making a big splash, whether it's Harper or Machado. I believe the White Sox are going to be in this thing until the very end.
Is there any belief whatsoever that the Giants are going to kick the tires on this, or is the new regime thinking, you know what, Harper's a nice acquisition, but that's not for what we're trying to do right now?
It's the latter. I don't see Farhan Zaidi and everything we have observed in his past in terms of the clubs he has been with, the recommendations that he has made on spending to make his first move be a $300 million plus signing of Bryce Harper at a time when I think he and many around the organization acknowledge that a new way of doing things is probably warranted and even a rebuild of some sort is required. I don't see him doing that and further encumbering his plans in that way. So I think that Farhan's going to want to stay very nimble and build in as much flexibility as he can with likely a Bumgarner trade, possibly a Brandon Belt trade, but certainly for him, cluttering things up in a good way with an elite player, obviously, but putting more big contracts on the payroll, guys, I just don't see that being something he wants to do in his first offseason.
John, you reported yesterday the Phillies have spoken with the Giants about Madison Bumgarner, and that with Patrick Corbin signing with the Nationals, maybe they have a little bit more urgency to bring in an additional pitcher. The Brewers are also a possible destination. Of the three scenarios, he stays with the Giants, he goes to the Phillies, he goes to the Brewers. How do you rank the likeliness of all three?
I would say the Phillies are number one. And I would say that the Brewers are number two and staying is number three. I just don't see any way that the Giants fail to move him this wintertime unless the offers are so low that they just can't bring themselves to move him at that price. Of course, I've mentioned that fully knowing that I'm not aware of exactly what's been offered by both of these teams, but just that conversations have taken place. And I just have to think that the motivations of both those two teams, they know what they need, and they need someone precisely like Madison Bumgarner in both cases. I just have to think that when that circumstance exists, that the atmosphere for a deal is there. And yes, the Phillies could go out there and they could sign a Nathan Eovaldi, they could sign a Jay Happ or a Dallas Keuchel, but I think when you look at their overall organizational depth, they really just need someone for the short term to carry them through until some of their other good young pitching arrives. And that person is Madison Bumgarner. So I think the Phillies are probably the most likely situation of all. I think the Brewers are some distance after that. And then I think staying in San Francisco is probably third on that list. There may also be other clubs involved that we're not talking about right now. But I just think that given the atmosphere and what Farhan Zaidi sees in this roster as needing to happen, I think it is more likely than not that Bumgarner's wearing a different uniform by the start of spring training.
MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network, John Morosi, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Bumgarner is 13 days younger than Patrick Corbin, who just got that six-year, $140 million deal with the Washington Nationals. Do you envision any Bumgarner trade coming complete with a new contract courtesy of his new team?
It's a great question, but I think the answer is no. We have not seen this happen very often in baseball in recent years where there's been a trade contingent on an extension. I can recall the Johan Santana deal, but that was now more than 10 years ago when he went from the Twins to the Mets. So I would be surprised. I wouldn't say that it can't happen, but it's probably unlikely. And really, when you consider that price point and what you just described is really interesting about the age. And of course, we know all that Madison has achieved in his career. So if Madison's a free agent right now, even coming after a couple seasons in which he missed time because of injury, I still think if he were a free agent today, he is signing a nine-figure contract. And so if that's the case, and if you know that you would be able to get him for 1 year at $12 million, there's a lot of value there. I mean, the Giants should be able to say, listen, you would have to pay for this pitcher if you wanted him on the open market, more than $100 million. And right now I'm giving you to him for 1 year at $12 million. You should have to pay a premium to get that pitcher at that price point for 1 year. And I think that's a very compelling argument. I agree with that argument. And for that reason, the Giants are in a very strong position to get someone's top one or two prospect even though it was just for a one-season rental, you could say, of Madison Bumgarner.
Does the price go up or down then at the deadline if you only get a half season of Madison Bumgarner? As far as prospects coming back, would the Giants benefit or would they be hindered by waiting this one out until July?
Well, it's a fascinating point because when you look at it right now in the overall market, the Giants are at somewhat of a disadvantage because the other clubs can say, well, listen, I'll just go sign someone. I can sign Happ or Eovaldi or Keuchel or Post for Yusei Kikuchi coming over from Japan. So there are other options, whereas during the season, the trade market is the one game in town. It's a fascinating point. I would say, though, that the Giants probably are at an advantage to at some point in time trade him now because you have more teams that are involved for whom he fits, who have the payroll flexibility. And he is someone whose contract, guys, is so manageable that you could add him in January and teams are going to be able to fit him into their payroll because it's not that big of a number. So it's a great point that you raise, but I think that because the contract is so manageable, I think trading him in the wintertime is preferable.
We spent so much time talking about Bryce Harper, we've almost missed the other big-name free agent that's out there, and that's Manny Machado, also 26 years of age. What's the latest on Machado's sweepstakes?
Well, it's interesting. I talked to a source this week who says that there is more action right now on Harper than there is on Manny. And this is not someone who's an agent of either player, so he's a neutral observer in all of this. And I find that interesting. I find that believable. I really think that for Machado, the lingering negativity surrounding the comments in the playoffs have had a longer shelf life than I thought they would. And I do think that they've had a negative impact on his market value with the New York Yankees and potentially the Phillies as well. The Phillies have now acquired Gene Segura to play shortstop. They may still look at Manny as a third baseman, but there's a little bit less impetus to make that move. The team that I will say, and I mentioned this on Bryce Harper, the Chicago White Sox are ready to spend. They're ready to announce their return to relevancy. And so I believe for both Harper and Machado, the White Sox are going to be there. And if the rest of Machado's marketplace crumbles, the White Sox will be the team waiting to give him a long-term deal.
One more for John Morosi here on 95.7 The Game. It's a dealer's choice, John. I'll leave it up to you to talk either about hockey coming to Seattle or the flame out of your Michigan Wolverines. Go.
I love this. I love the Vegas reference there as well. So Michigan, I still think it was, if you were going to begin the season and say that if on the 15th of August you said Michigan's going to go 10-2, they'll lose on the road at Notre Dame and on the road at Ohio State, and they'll play in a New Year's Six bowl game. That's still a pretty quality season. They're a top 10 team. Are they the elite of the elite? No, but I think that probably would have been said before the season began as well. So I think in general, good season, not a great season, and I think a win over Florida in the Peach Bowl would go a long way toward validating what would then be an 11-2 year. And a very positive outcome for the Maize and Blue.
MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network. 95.7 The Game contributor, the great John Morosi, with us here on 95.7 The Game. John, we always appreciate the time. Thank you very much. Keep up the tremendous work.
My pleasure, guys. You probably could have added Michigan apologist to my titles there, but I felt like that was a fair way of describing things, at least in my own mind here in Ann Arbor.
Good luck in the Peach Bowl, John. We'll all
Thanks,
be
guys. I
watching.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
See you, John.
Thank you.
All right, we got to react. Now that the market's starting to heat up, the Bumgarner conversation, what can the Giants get in return? And more specifically, was it a fantastic point made by Dan Dibley? Or is Morosi just being way too generous with his applause these days? Joe Lowe, Dibs, back in a flash here on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Brian Baldinger from the NFL Network set to join us in 11 minutes at 7 o'clock. In addition, we're about a half hour away from announcing another name. And if you are that name and you call us back in 9 minutes and 57 seconds, you'll have a chance to qualify to win a trip to Hawaii. You and three friends, courtesy of your boys, Joe Lowe and Dibs, right here on 95.7 The Game. However, the only way to hear your name called or to have a chance at hearing your name called at 7:20 a.m., every day this week and next week, is if you register for the contest at 957thegame.com. So get that done. John Morosi, MLB insider from Fox Sports and the MLB Network, joined us in the last segment to talk about this tweet that he sent out yesterday. Quote, Madison Bumgarner's trade market now coming into focus. Phillies have spoken with Giants about him and have a greater need for a left-handed co-ace with Patrick Corbin signing with rival Nationals. Brewers are another possible destination. Now, the Giants have done an excellent job, in my opinion, of, you know, letting it be known they're open to the discussion, but not outright saying we're putting them on the block. Last thing you want to do. You want to create as much leverage as humanly possible here. So the two ways you go about doing that are, one, making sure you have at least two teams interested in Bumgarner's services, which is no problem, and two, creating the illusion that, well, we are interested in moving him, but we're not going to be forced to move him. We can always keep him here and every 5 days have a sellout crowd come support our guy. And if we turn this thing around faster than people are anticipating, we've still got one of the best left-handed aces in postseason history anchoring our rotation. So if you're the Giants, you want to make sure you're negotiating on two fronts. One, with as many teams as possible, and two, with the idea that Bumgarner might not actually be available. So to Farhan Zaidi, I tip my hat and say you're doing a great job. But this Phillies thing, they've already been aggressive. They've traded prospects and Carlos Santana to Seattle in exchange for Gene Segura. He's going to play shortstop for them. They're moving in the right direction. Now they're looking at possibly making a move for Bumgarner. And this is great news because the NL East is in full swing right now. Yeah. Minus the Marlins.
Yes, well, and the Marlins are still looking toward 2021 as they potentially will trade Realmuto before the start of the season. One of their few remaining major league stars. Go ahead and trade him, Jeets. Go ahead and reload this thing. Keep kicking that can down the road. But if you're the Giants, you look at your roster, and I think you're right about Zaidi in that he knows you can't just outright say, hey, I'm Farhan and Madison's on the block, you know, glad to be here. And so you kind of ease your way into the water, you let it be known, you talk to some teams, you see what the offers are, and I think you're going to see resolution on this in the next week or two as the winter meetings start on Sunday. Everyone gets together, you'll get a better sense for the kind of prospect package the Giants might get back. And they might just stick and stay until the trade deadline. And like you said, there's a possibility that they have him pitch out this year, $12 million, and go into the offseason next year and then either extend him or at that point he's a free agent and he can go wherever he wants.
Patrick Corbin is a 29-year-old left-hander. He is 13 days older than Madison Bumgarner. He just signed with the Nationals yesterday, 6 years, $140 million. He's going to make $23.3 million per year. If that's what the Nationals were willing to give up to get a guy who has had one career season in 6 years in which he had a sub-3.4 ERA, imagine what the market's like for a guy like Bumgarner, who you know can eat up a ton of innings throughout the course of the season, pitch at a very high level, and then come playoff time is as bankable and reliable as pretty much anybody in the business. Right now, Washington's top three pitchers, Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, a combined 20 years, $525 million, $78.3 million per year. And this is a team that never even wins in the playoffs.
Right, and I guess they're trying to reverse that with that big three.
Yeah, you think?
If in last year they were had a good enough team, they should have made the playoffs. But you look at that big three and you think about them in a short series, and it's trouble. That'd be a hard one to face. Scherzer has the postseason experience. Strasburg has the tantalizing stuff. And then you throw in Corbin, a guy with some experience as well. So,
but this has got to be great news for the Giants. If a team was willing to spend 6 years and $140 million on a guy who, hey, Corbin's coming off an all-star season. It was his best season. Don't get me wrong. 11-7, 3.15 ERA, 200 innings pitched.
A good year.
But $23 million per year for that at 29 years of age. Imagine what someone would do for Bumgarner knowing, you know what? And this is what Morosi said, and you and he were talking about this. The idea that you could have Bumgarner for just $12 million this year.
Right.
Fine. If you're going to make a push for just 1 year, bring him on for $12 million. Hope he gets it done. If he pitches great, try to re-sign him. If not, let him go. Or if everything falls apart, you can move Bumgarner at the trade deadline. Bumgarner could end up moving to a team like Philly, and if the whole thing blows up and they play terribly, maybe they move him. So you're on two teams in 1 year. But bottom line, I mean, the assets coming back in this, is it starting to get to a point where we should be thinking about a big-time package? I mean, we're talking like, should we be getting greedy here is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely, especially when you see what Corbin got. And Bumgarner's a better pitcher than Corbin is, even though his velocity might be dipping and the injuries might be a minor concern for some teams. You look at what he's done in the postseason, and I think Philadelphia makes the most sense, a team that appears to be on the cusp of breaking through and being a playoff team, but you don't have a lot of playoff experience on that team. I don't know what the biggest game Aaron Nola's ever pitched in is. It certainly isn't Game 7 of the World Series. So
close.
You're bringing a guy like Bumgarner to anchor that rotation, a rotation that seems to be getting better by the day, and all of a sudden you might be onto something. And you mentioned the East. It's a bit of an arms race out there in the NL East.
They can smell blood in the water, clearly, based on what happened last year. Philadelphia already made the move for Segura. They're linked to Harper. They're linked to Machado. They're linked to Michael Brantley and every other outfielder available should they not come away with Bryce Harper. They actually made the move to trade Santana to Seattle so that Rhys Hoskins, Sacramento product, could move back to first base, freeing up an outfield spot for Harper. They're going all the way. The Mets just acquired Robinson Cano. You've got Atlanta. What did Atlanta do? Atlanta made some move that I'm blanking on, and you got the Nationals going out and getting Patrick Corbin. Outside of the Marlins, every single team is getting aggressive. Josh Donaldson, thank you very much. 1 year, $23 million to Atlanta. Every single team's going for it. So that's exactly what you want. It's a seller's market if you're Farhan Zaidi, and we're only talking about one division. Milwaukee wants to get in the mix.
Right.
God forbid the Yankees decide they want to get in the mix. Now something's cooking.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking to acquire Madison Bumgarner, you got to be a National League team, because I can't imagine having that bat not be in your lineup every fifth day. And also, by the way, the ability to throw him in there as a pinch hitter at times as well. I think Milwaukee's a fascinating one because we saw last year them make a move toward the bullpenning strategy. Now, was that an analytical movement, or was it one born straight out of desperation? If you acquire someone like Madison Bumgarner, all of a sudden your need to rely on that flawed strategy of bullpenning is lessened by a guy who you know is going to give you 7 1/3 every time.
You are really anti-bullpenning. And every time you get a chance to take a shot at the analytic heads in the back room there, you take it.
Analytic head, singular.
It's, yeah, sorry, it's our nice producer, guy. Producer Cody.
Yeah, it's producer Cody who tried to funeralize my debunking of bullpenning when the Brewers had a postseason game that went their way. And then the next time out, bullpenning fell on its face. So to me, it's just like the old adage about two quarterbacks. If you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. And to me, it's the same idea with bullpenning. Until you can really see a team go out there and be that effective over a long stretch, I don't buy it.
If you've got 12 one-inning arms, you have no one-inning arms.
Right.
Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. You have no good pitcher. If you have 12 relievers you're relying on, you have no good pitcher.
Brian Baldinger, in about 3 minutes, how do you get a 10-game suspension for PED usage or a violation of the PED policy in the NFL when you're a long snapper? We'll ask him that and more in a couple minutes. I know I talked to you about this before, but if it is the end of the road for Bumgarner, does he get a statue down at AT&T Park? Because if I ride the bike or drive past it, I'm always fortunate enough to see the statues outside. There was a nice mural, a lot of flowers put outside of Willie McCovey's statue a few weeks ago when the legend passed away. Does Bumgarner get a statue? Has he done enough to warrant a place out there alongside Marichal and Willie Mays and Willie McCovey?
No, but he gets one inside, because I know Barry Bonds doesn't have a statue outside, but he's got something inside the stadium. So I think that's where Bumgarner goes. You talk about Willie Mays Plaza, for example, with Willie Mays out there. That's the icon. And Madison Bumgarner is just not quite at that level. You're talking about maybe the greatest player in the history of the game, so he gets a plaza. And Willie McCovey, he gets a cove. May he rest in peace, one of the most popular, if not the most popular, giant of all time. So he gets a body of water. Madison Bumgarner, his performance is close to being on that level, but he's not quite that legendary status. So his statue, his remembrance would be on the inside of the stadium, not on the outside.
Look at you. What about Samardzija?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Samardzija gets an IOU for, please, can you give us our $60 million back?
Well, it's a fascinating point.
Thank you, John.
That's
Thank
another
you.
Thing. We'll take you guys behind the curtain before we bring on Baldinger, because we like to do that from time to time. John Morosi is one of our favorite guests for a variety of reasons. The insight, the knowledge, the way
laugh.
In which he answers questions, the laugh. Yeah, he's dynamite to have on, because he's going to give you enough material to react to. And that's ultimately what you want in a radio guest. Guy comes on, drops some knowledge, you're able to play off that the rest of the show. Maybe the other shows jump in as well. We play a little inside game with Morosi when he comes on to see who can get Morosi to say something like, well, that's a great question.
That's a great question.
right there. We actually have that drop that we pretty much only play for ourselves because we find it humorous. So you can't see us, but when Morosi says that to one of our questions, you have everyone in the room reacting and going nuts because that's the entire goal. No disrespect to John Morosi. We're not actually listening, I think, to any of the answers.
Well,
we're
really
just playing
great.
Stupid games.
And today, for example, you got, well, that's a good question, Joe.
Yeah.
And you turn off your mic and you basically looked at me and said, good luck following that.
I did. I literally looked at you and I mouthed the words, good luck following that.
And it hurt, Joe. It hurt me. And I thought, I got to dig deep and ask a good question so that way he could say, well, that's a great question, Dan, because then great question is better than good question. But I actually got something else. I got... What, that's a fascinating point?
Well, it's a fascinating point.
And I don't know if I've ever heard that before.
No.
And I'm starting to realize that because that's so rare, and because the word fascinating, it can be construed a few different ways, but in this one, it's very positive. I'm starting to think that you may have not only won that interview, but all Morosi interviews.
I mean,
fascinating point. To think that John Morosi, who knows everything about baseball.
Smart guy.
Who literally studies Spanish so that he can communicate with these foreign-born prospects who might not know English, would think something that Dan Dibley says is fascinating. To me, that's pretty much the end. I don't know if we can do a whole lot more here with this show moving forward.
I would have. That's a great new Morosi laugh. And I would have walked it off at that point. But, you know, without Lo here, I didn't want to leave you and Anna in the lurch and, you know, have it be a kind of like the old Jemele Hill show with Michael Smith. He said, she said. Is that
That's
basically?
Right.
I can't believe I went there, but I did.
Well, we're referencing everything because with Lo out, we've been doing our best Mike and Mike. I'm going to throw 50 things your way every segment. You're going to spray them around the yard like BP, and then we're going to move on. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your 7 o'clock hour, and it is a big one. At 7:20, you will have your next opportunity to win a trip to Hawaii. However, if you have not gone to the website, which is 957thegame.com, and you haven't registered for the contest, you can't hear your name called. So do that now. Go to 957thegame.com, register, and every day, this week and next week, we will announce a name at 7:20 in the morning. And if that name calls us back in 9 minutes and 57 seconds, boom, you've qualified for a chance to win that trip to Hawaii. In addition, starting at 7:20... right after the contest announcement, we are going to do some reminiscing. Golden State is in Cleveland tonight to take on the Cavaliers. Over the last 4 years, these two teams have met 30 times. What are your favorite moments? What are the most impactful moments? What are the best, most fascinating moments? Since we're going to be using that word today, we're going to tee you guys up